woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Warm up, Extraction Yanks. I'm Tom Arnold. Just met Weber and Weber with his henchman, Jake Silverman. S&P futures down 775. Dow futures down 67. NASDAQ futures down 23. So the S&P is kind of, well, they're all down about 0.3%. We got oil. Big news this morning, though, up $1.36, $59.19. Stockpiles dropped, and we had a tropical depression starting up in the Gulf, so they've evacuated some rigs, so we'll see what happens with that one. And we have the Fed chief going in front of Congress today, walking a tightrope. I think when guys accentuate what they do and how important all this is, not that a Fed announcement isn't important, it sure is, but the it's just an idea that I think people think they can be this big time savior, and I don't know that they can be over the long term. One of the and you got Trump concerned about the strong dollar, so he wants to lower interest rates, which causes the dollar to drop. So we'll see how all that is. But Kevin, how are you?
Well, I'm doing okay. So much to unpack in that opening statement. First of all, I mean, this is really important stuff too. Is if you got the Fed chairman walking the tightrope, then I fully expect that our first bumper music coming out of commercial will be Stevie Ray Vaughan's Tightrope.
Not just a tightrope, walking a tightrope over Niagara Falls, according to CNN.
Okay, so we got that, and then because you know that you mentioned his henchman Jack, Matt's henchman Jack. Yeah. I think the henchman would be a good softball team name, don't you?
Oh yeah, yeah. Better than what are you guys?
How about rock band?
Yeah, remember the Stooges, Niagara Falls. Which episode?
Slowly I turn.
Yes, step by step.
Step by step. That's another. We could bump her out of that, too.
Yeah, we could. Manny refuses to put, even though I sent it to him a couple times, refuses to put as one of our bumpers, Quiet, Numbskull, I'm Broadcasting. Maybe that's not as politically correct as it might used to be. Maybe was it.
Well, yeah, well, you can also throw in a, an wise guy.
Yeah. Or whatever, we have one of these Fed guys. We go, oh, wise guy. But, yeah, it's,
All right, we've just queued up the rest of the show here.
I
think, you know.
Well, you know, it's...
Just play some Stooges clips and leave us. Fine.
We'll be fine.
Or maybe we are the Stooges clips. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, I've read stuff on a lot of stuff. I don't know why I do, but if you look at some comedy, I mean, classic comedy. When I say classic, a lot of it is because you have, you know, you didn't have much of a. You either had to be on a stage or like a really crummy TV. So it's all kind of, you know, basically. Every male personality is embodied in the Stooges, when you think about it. There's always the person who's going to be a total control freak, right? There's a guy who just a total goof off, and there's a guy who just wants everybody to get along, basically. Mo obviously is the control freak. Curly doesn't give a crap. And Larry just wants everybody.
Sounds like growing up in my family.
Yeah. Well, whenever you see comedy, you know, the people who wrote the stuff, I mean, you know, nobody's supposed to watch Amos and Andy, but it's virtually the exact same drill. You know, there's the board guy who's trying to control the whole neighborhood, the Kingfish. There's the Andy who's a total goof off, always getting in trouble. And then there's the other guy, Amos, who's a voice of reason, sort of all gets them all back together at the end of the show, right? I mean, but it's a period piece, but even though, like the Honeymooners, there's one guy who's always getting in trouble, there's a guy who's kind of his sidekick, and then the women got them all back sane by the end of the show, right? I mean, it's all kind of, when you think about it, it all kind of flows, and it's almost like every day, you run into those people all day long that are the different kinds, right? I mean, obviously it's not comedy, but there's a lot of truth in comedy.
I think you're writing a script for a management class for me.
It doesn't change, does it?
I mean, figure out how to make that work.
Well, when you start
and still maintain some academic integrity here.
Well, I mean, that's what I learned in college when I ditched out of Italian and went into, you know, Greek drama and Roman drama, and we did some Shakespeare. This is, you know, thousands of years ago, and it's the same stuff. Human beings have the same issues, right? And none of that's changed. I mean, it's amazing how the human psyche has remained the same over how many thousand years, even though, you know, all kinds of other stuff seems to have changed or has changed. But, I mean, the same people wanting to be more than they should be, hubris, you know, the same adultery, the same this and that that was in a Greek drama, guess what? It's in a modern play. That's why you could put them on stage today and they still sell, right?
Yeah, well, and I definitely have worked Shakespeare into basically Shakespeare shows up almost every class because I have these you know, important leadership concepts that go up on the board before we start, and I refer to them nonstop, and they're, you know, literally in every class. I could teach a stats class and it's still a leadership course. So this sort of reaches back to Henry V. And you have, you know, a good old Prince Hal, who is the future king of England, and he's hanging out with Falstaff, and nobody approves of Falstaff because he's a party boy. He's an older guy. He's a bad influence on the prince, and he just wants to go to the taverns and drink and have a good time. And finally, Falstaff, you know, who Warren Bennis, the great Warren Bennis, who is the late great Warren Bennis, who was a leadership, you know, guru. He probably wrote more books on the subject than anybody. And Bennis referred to Falstaff as the prince's executive coach. He said, "If you want to lead people, you have to be able to enter their world. So definitely go to the taverns."
Well, yeah, I mean,
but I think that's a really profound concept there. That is what leaders do, is they make connections with people, and so it becomes very personal, even though you might be in a professional setting. If I can work in Shakespeare and his rather wry sense of humor, I ought to be able to work in the wit and wisdom of the Three Stooges.
Well, when you think about it, when we learned this in high school, again, this is not a class on drama because I wouldn't be qualified, but you realize as you age, Kevin, you pick up on things you never picked up on in high school. I mean, then you were just worried about reading the play, taking the test, trying to get an A or a B on the damn thing, right?
No, I didn't worry about that.
Well, but I mean, you tried to do something halfway decent.
More about basically chasing girls and...
Well, that too. There weren't any girls to chase in our school. We only had guys.
Yeah, I know, but there were girls at the other schools.
Yes, they were around. But anyway, I never quite realized why the professor, the teacher, the brother Copper, who was teaching, went through incredible detail in how the theater was designed and made. And it never dawned on my dull brain at the time. You don't see people do that today. I mean, if you're going to go to an opera, you know, pretty much it's an opera crowd, right? Everybody, even if they hate it, they're going to walk out with their pinky in the air and say they loved it because they don't want to sound like they have no class, like Charlie the Tuna, you know. So you have those different kinds of crowds, but in the Shakespearean day, You had all the people who had money essentially up in the seats, so you had to appeal to them. But you also had the losers who didn't have a chair right in front, called the groundlings. You know, they were waiting for the part in the play where the guy beat his wife or something, or there was a fight or something, right? I mean, so you had two totally different groups you had to essentially...
In other words, the hockey fans.
Basically. Well, that's exactly true. There's people that go, but not as much today, but in the old days, people went there to see a fight. Yeah, but there was part of the group
now,
that did
now
that.
Now you have to go to the roller derby.
Yeah, now you got to go to the roller derby. But anyway, it's all sort of interesting. And when you... The dynamic, when you see what's going on in Washington between whose fault it is and who puts themselves out there in front of the group and, you know, who gets blamed and all those kinds of, that whole dynamic, the more you read about dynamics in the past, it's the same show, Kevin, right? I mean, it changed, the names are changed, the names are changed to protect the innocent, right? They used to say a Dragnet or something. But, you know,
which leads us to Jeffrey Epstein.
Yeah. Yeah, well, but now you have, but there's pressures on everything. And every time you do this, when you run the dollar up, okay, you essentially drop the price of oil really for somebody living in Chicago or Michigan, right? I mean, in terms of, as the dollar gets stronger, that $60 a barrel becomes, you know, it's okay for us, but if all of a sudden the British pound drops 10%, it takes 1.1 British pounds to get the dollars to buy the barrel of oil, because all oil is transacted in dollars. So when you think about it, all these little moves all over the place, these little headlines, all matter. And and one of the biggest issues with the Fed, with the president, and is and you and I, I'm going to say he's not so much of a purist in a lot of ways. I mean, I look at...
let's go with that one for sure.
Well, I look at the policy in Europe of negative interest rates as being an absolute fiasco. And the last thing I want to do is follow them down the same rat hole. You know, like the band in Animal House, where the guy just turned down the alley and they all followed him and all banged into their wall. I mean, that's an insane policy to me. However, if you don't go down the same rat hole and say, okay, we're going to keep interest rates at least somewhat at a level where there at least are some, which our guys have decided they now have to do, which I totally agree with, by the way. Now, whether they cut a quarter, I don't really care if it's 250 or 2.25, as long as it's not 1 or 0. But now, in order to get interest on your money, people in Europe are going to want to put their money in dollars, because they can get interest over here and they can't over there, even if it's 2% or 1%. I mean, if you could, I mean, what manner of moron, and I use that absolutely word for word, what manner of moron would buy a 10-year note in Europe for a minus 3%, 0.3%, rather than here at 2%? 2% is not good, but it's a hell of a lot better than getting money back less than you gave them.
It's 5 points better than -3.
Yeah. Well, and then so well, no, it's -0.3, but still, it's
oh, okay.
It, but it's
2.3, but
yeah, two points
better.
Yeah, 2.3 points better. So, but now that means that people in Europe are going to want to buy dollars so they can buy the stuff here. Now, when you buy dollars, guess what? The dollar goes up, and when you make the dollar go up, you make U.S. goods less competitive. You know, if you're selling widgets, to the widget made in Germany. So to the extent that the president looks at that and he says, I don't want any trade deficits, this dollar's going up, why is the dollar going up? He probably asked somebody in the place, I'm sure he don't even know, or maybe he does, I don't know. And they said, well, because our interest rates are too high. Well, what is this? These feds, these guys are bleeps. I just put the guy in there. So then he pulls out the Twitter and says, guys don't know what they're doing, because he's focusing. I've never seen a guy more focused on his trade deficit. I mean, virtually everything the guy's done has to do with his trade deficit. And yet it's gotten worse since he's been in there. So these problems are, and don't believe me, one of the hardest things I ever did in economics was international economics. Because so much crap happens when you do one thing, that if you have essentially a neophyte looking at one item, and he's governing toward that one item, all kinds of crap can happen. It was yesterday or the day before, we were talking about how when by putting this huge steel tariff on places, what you've actually done is lowered the price of steel. You've cracked the price of steel to where the older furnaces here are now out of business, and the people here that have the newer technology in this country are putting the people that he allegedly was trying to save out of business because they can't keep up. Essentially, there's two types. There's the, well, I'm not a steel expert, but there's the old open hearth where you take the iron ore and you basically make steel. Well, these electric arc things, they're taking recycled steel or metal really of any kind, and they use that essentially as their iron ore. And guess what? They're way more efficient than the old, let's make it from scratch guys. So those guys, you know, ArcelorMittal is putting U.S. Steel basically out of business. U.S. Steel's lost, what, how many $1 billion in market cap? The plant that Trump went in Illinois and they started the plant back up and they had the second one there and don't worry, we're starting this one up. Not only is the second one not started up, the first one's probably going to close. So whatever, you know, he attempted to do with the sledgehammer approach had exactly the opposite than, you know, maybe he intended, at least at those places. Now, the other guys are doing fine. They're doing better, even though their stocks are down, too. So, I mean, you really, when you enter into this, but I still don't think that you want to get in a position where I don't see how the negative interest rates. Japan has been a ghost economy now for 20 years. So anybody who says that policy is working, where's your evidence? I mean, Kevin, can you look at what's going on in Japan and say negative interest rates, buying up all the stocks to keep the stock market up and pushing money out of the system, has worked at all? They don't have a vibrant economy. They don't have any savers. And if they do, they don't make any money. So what's the point? You've intercepted the entire way economies work and basically put a dagger into it, thinking you're saying you're going to help it or fix it. You haven't helped it. You've made it worse. In my opinion. So there. How's that? So there.
Well, it goes back to your one of your favorite things, and I think you and I interpret it slightly differently. But the idea of Goodhart's law is that you're targeting something and specifically trying to move that that number, whether it be the trade deficit or take your pick. And you don't try and make a number move. You try and do activities that will have a positive effect in a lot of ways, and the number then will move as a result of the activities, not because you targeted it and did something. Because you can do trade deficit is an example. You can just go say, okay, tariffs, that'll make that number move. But is that a fundamentally good thing to be doing with the economy? And if it is, then fine, but if it's not, then you made the number move, but you did damage elsewhere.
Well, it's a very crude way of looking at it. And the economy, to me, is almost like a living organism. when it's working on all cylinders, it's a beautiful thing to see. Just like the human body or a dog or whatever. And when it doesn't, it's very difficult to say, how to jump start it. It's like, if you go into the late 50s, 60s, when things, it was like an economic time, wasn't a great time to be alive if you were sick or anything, but economic time, you had all these things working. You had huge increases in productivity. You had people making money that were, they could easily live on, and they could afford some of the new things that were coming out. You could afford the washing machine, you could afford the car, because the things were priced enough to where you could pay labor and so forth to where they could buy their own stuff. We're totally different than what's happening in Mexico, where they're making $40,000 pickup trucks and people are making $3 an hour. Well, that's not happening then. So, but it was a different time where you had essentially people's wages going up, I'll say 3% a year, Kevin, basically on productivity, and you had an inflation rate of 2% a year, which means every asset you bought, be it a house, be it a stock or whatever, not every single stock, it always companies cratered, but you bought a house, the price of the house is going up 2% a year, which isn't huge, and you have your income's going up, say, 3, and if you get promoted, it's even doing better than that. But by and large, more people are going to school, schools are growing. I don't know there was anything that wasn't really growing, Kevin. I mean, You could see the difference in society, though, in like Major League Baseball. Look where the price of the tickets were, and they did their best to bring a million people into the place, right? Even though Chicago had more people then than they do now. The Cubs drew a million in a good year, not three. And the ticket prices were next to nothing, and they let ladies in for free on Thursday. So it wasn't like it was, you know, everybody was rolling in dough. But I'm saying the trends were positive. And in there, there were all kinds of good things that happened. I just described maybe four or five out of the 50 economic things that happened to be working at the time, okay? You know, you look at a human body, and then all kinds of things are happening. The person's eating, they're exercising, they're walking, they're thinking, they're pooping, whatever. But all of a sudden, somebody's laying on a slab to say, well, if we could just get him pooping once a day, everything will be fine. Wait a minute. He's not eating, the heart's not working right. I mean, to pick one thing out, the inflation, and say, if we can just get that inflation back to that 2% like in the 60s, we'll all be fine. Kevin, it's ignorant. I mean, why would you, out of all the things that are happening, why would you pick that one out as a quote, the target? When you're not getting the 3% wage growth, you're not getting any of the other stuff that's happening. The increase in productivity like there was, you know, that type of thing. Population growth, you name it. Internal population growth. People are having babies coming back from the war where we don't have internal. There's all kinds of things happening. And yet, we can have a Fed guy says we got to get this 2% interest inflation up there. Why? It's just one of 100.
Yeah, So it's the choice of it, and then it's the activities we choose. Because if activities are intended to move the target, they will. And yet, if you're doing activities because they're fundamentally right things to do, then the target will move itself. And that's ultimately the point, and that's what we haven't done in I don't know how long, because it's now such a political activity, I believe, and as a political activity, there are things that administrations, you know, want to be able to say, and so we execute according to those numbers rather than doing solid fundamentals. And unfortunately, I don't see that changing anytime soon.
No, I mean,
it's been that way for a really, really long time, and I don't think it's going to change.
I would say that the number you're shooting for, which again, I'm already being disingenuous because it's a combination of several numbers, is the median wage growth to be slightly higher, or maybe even a lot higher if you can do it, slightly higher than the real inflation rate. We haven't been there in 30 years, and we don't even look at that as a goal, because I don't think we come close to that.
Yeah. So, you know, where I'm familiar with it from a policy standpoint is state of Indiana, and state of Indiana has targeted the industries that it wants to bring to the state, and then is doing all kinds of activities to support it. Whether it is financial support for certain kinds of education, you know, you can get a next level jobs, what they call their workforce ready grant in like five fields, and that's it. You know, and those programs are totally supported because that's the businesses. You know, it's technology, it's supply chain related stuff, manufacturing technologies, healthcare. Those are the targeted industries, and they will support anything they can do to build a qualified workforce for that, and then, you know, believing that they will attract the businesses, and those businesses will have higher paying jobs. So that's what they're doing, rather than just saying, well, we want higher wages, therefore let's pass a bill that says minimum wage is going to.
Oh,
fill in the blank.
That would if you just focused on that, it would lead you to a. Kind of a wrong, but what was going on in Indiana, it's always a positive, Kevin. Whenever you take Joe Jamoke or Jane Jamoke and you can put her through one of your classes and all of a sudden instead of, just working in a warehouse, he or she is now those warehouses are hiring. They need people that have a better skill set than that. Oh, by the way, they're willing to pay more. That person, if you can take them from 20 grand to 50 grand, or maybe even more, you're doing an incredible thing, okay? But if the reason why that thing is there in the first place is because it left Chicago or Detroit because, you know, people didn't want to pay that. The neighborhood got horrible. God knows what. The transportation.
Tax base could be anything.
Could be anything. If all of a sudden you're just recreating what you already had some other place, first of all, you should definitely do it, and it's a positive for your area. But if you're governing from the Oval Office, you're saying we haven't gained anything, right? I mean, really? I mean, if a plant closes in Detroit, it opens up some other place just to save $2. All you're really doing is pissing away money on moving, right?
Well, true. However, if a plant closes in Illinois because they hate the tax situation,
I get it,
in there, and they're having a hard time attracting qualified employees because there's a shortage of well-trained people in those industries, and they move to, you know, pick one. It can be Indiana, but it can be anything else. Then you might actually get more because now that business, instead of just treading water, is going to be able to expand.
Well, I agree. I'm just saying, at every level you go, though, there's, you know, it's like at Notre Dame, you really care if the football team wins. If you're the head of the NCAA, all you care about is you have a huge lot of people watching the national championship game. You don't care who wins, right? But at different levels, anyway, S&P futures down 675. We'll talk about that when we come back.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com, that's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right
now. Hello and welcome to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howe. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. Mr. Jack Silverman helping him out. Mr. Kevin O'Neill in Indiana, where he always is. Well, sometimes he's in Michigan. Actually, he works in Indiana. He lives in Michigan, so he's a Michiana sort of guy. S&P futures down 675 ahead of the Fed testimony in front of Congress. NASDAQ futures down 16. We were down yesterday morning. We were down about this much, and then we came back and finished actually up a little bit in most of the market. But we've got the Dow down 51. We've got oil up $1.26. 10-year yield, we're back up to 2.098, so it's crept up. In fact, it's almost 2.1. It got under, it was under 2, I'm going to say a week ago, a week and a half ago. So it's crept back kind of strong here. DAX down 50.4%, FTSE down 3, call that flat. Decaron up 3, call that flat. So not much going on there. Over in Asia, we got the Nikkei down 31.1%, Shanghai down 12.4%, Hang Seng up 88.3. They were down a bunch yesterday, so maybe we'll get back there or come back yesterday again. West Texas down 125, 59.08, up 125. Brent up 134, 65.50, trying to push back toward that $60 number. Natural gas 2.43, that's going nowhere. RBOB 195, that's as high as we've seen that in a while. Not so sure that's good. Gold down 290, 1397, still hovering right around that $1,400 number, stuck there for a while. Silver down 1 cent at 1513. Individual stocks in the Dow moving a lot. None of those. Not anything. The biggest mover is Boeing, down 91 cents. So not much of a move there at all. Apple down 87 cents, right about that 200 number, 237. What do you guys got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. The Sports Weather Traffic Update is brought to you by Luckbox Magazine. The Guide to Money and Probability is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. And Stocks and Jocks listeners receive a free digital subscription. Sign up today. There is no strings attached. That is a free digital subscription. They don't ask for a credit card number or anything like that. You just sign up, put your name in, put your email in. You get a subscription just like that. Luckbox.
Wait a minute, man. We should get all the advertisers. We can send them like underwear ads and stuff.
Luckboxmagazine.com/jocks to sign up for that. We highly recommend it. Off to a good start this morning on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways, especially compared to the last couple of days. Everyone's behaving themselves. They're looking good coming in on the Edens and Kennedy. Traffic volumes building on the Eisenhower and Stevenson, but no accidents or issues to report. Same for the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. Suburban tollways are all quiet. Only crash in the area right now is on the north side. Sheridan at Broadway, there's an accident. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be a hot and steamy one. Much warmer than it's been lately. We'll be partly cloudy skies with a high of 94. Some humidity as well. Could have some stray showers, especially in the afternoon and evening. Right now it's partly cloudy and 77 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, hot down there as well. Sunshine with a high of 112 today. Right now it's clear and 80. In sports, Major League Baseball All-Star Game was pretty much all that was going on last night. And it was a pretty good game. AL jumped up out to a 4-1 lead. NL rallied back to make it 4-3, but the American League held on to get the win. Aroldis Chapman had the save. He, of course, had some big outings in Cleveland with the Cubs, if you remember the World Series from 2016.
Oh, yeah.
The MVP was Indians pitcher Shane Bieber. The Cubs and White Sox that participated were relatively quiet. For the Cubs, Baez and Contreras each went 0 for 2. Bryant went 0 for 1 in his lone at bat. Jose Abreu went 0 for 1 as well. James McCann, though, got a hit. He was the only Cubs or White Sox player that got a hit. He was 1 for 1. And Lucas Giolito had a nice outing. One inning pitch, no earned runs, one strikeout, one walk. Back to you.
Oh, okay. You usually say Chief, and you didn't.
I usually do.
Yes, you do. But you're thinking about Vegas and softball.
Well, speaking of softball, we opened our 2019 campaign last night on the South Side. Not the Stocks and Jocks team, because the Radio League, unfortunately, has folded because they couldn't get enough teams the last couple of years, which is too bad. And now they gave up their rights to the park, so that ended that. But the Yaks opened up our 2019 campaign, immediately fell behind 4-0 after one. They scored four, we went 1-2, not 1-2-3, I actually got a hit. I was batting third, and I got a hit, but first two guys got out, and then the fourth guy got out, and so we went quietly in the first. They put up four, and I was like, here we go, and then we really shut them down after that. They scored one run the rest of the game, and we slowly came back, and your brother, Chief, got a big hit in the top of the seventh to put us up ahead, and we held on to win 6-5. So it was a good start to the 2019 campaign, and then we got another game tonight.
Well, yeah, you guys are kind of running late because didn't the league before you have rain problems or something?
Yeah, there was a lot of rainouts in Little League.
Yeah, Little League.
Little League had the park before us, and so that pushed it back. And then they had some like movies in the park thing that last week that conflicted, so we got pushed back another week. So we're finally they're cramming in like some I don't know like 16 games in like 4 weeks, and then playoffs start.
Yeah, that was Kevin. That was one of the nicest things. And when I lived south, grew up south, we actually lived. It was oddest little. Evergreen Park is a suburb. It's like a chunk out of Chicago. It's like surrounded by Chicago on three sides, so it's kind of an odd suburb. But we actually lived on a block where the other side of the street, 102nd Place, was Chicago, and we were Evergreen Park. So you got Chicago street lights and Chicago water and all that good stuff. So, but then one of the nicest things was, for some reason, well, not for some reason, but because there's a dramatic use of parks for Little League and for softball, men's and women's, but those times mostly men's. Women played on weekends, but the Chicago Little Leagues were basically April, May. You were done, I'm going to say, third week in June, the Little League, maybe the second week in June. So my buddies across the street.
Some cold weather games.
Oh, God. My buddies across the street. I used to go to their game, and I'm thinking, remember one of my guys, this guy smoked his line drive at him, and he caught it with his mitt, but I could see him out there, like, damn near crying. You know, but now Evergreen Park was, I'm going to say, normal. They played at the high school field and some of the field, but there was no softball league. So we didn't start till after, you know, after Memorial Day and played two games a week for 8 weeks and during the summer. And it seemed a lot more sane to me than standing out there at 9 o'clock on a Saturday morning on April 28th or something.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway.
And I played a lot of softball leagues that started that last week of April. We used to start as soon as daylight savings time kicked in.
Well, that makes sense.
And that wasn't the same dates that it happens now. It's moved a little bit.
But we're a week or two earlier now.
Yeah. So we would start, and man, you know, playing first base, and you know, for listeners who aren't Chicagoans, in Chicago, most people play 16-inch softball, which means you're playing barehanded. So you have that brand new hard softball with the laces high. It's about 45 degrees out, and the absolute worst part of the game, worse than anything else, was before the first inning when you'd go out there on the field and all your infielders wanted to get that one last really good hard throw in. And so you'd be sitting there with your fingers frozen and the ball keeps coming in going whap.
Yeah.
Whap, and then you're begging for fly balls.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
First inning. And then the ball is as hard as it's going to be at that moment too.
Yep.
It's crazy.
The hardest ball, the highest laces, your hands are cold, and you're getting smacked.
You had kind of a, should we
say? I was going to be darned if I was going to tell my guys not to do that, too, because, you know, I wanted them to have every confidence that they didn't need to think about their throw, just get it there.
Yeah.
Well, plus you had some wooden-headed guys there, too, that would throw it as hard as they could, even though it was cold.
You know, we had some really, really strong arms.
Oh, yeah. And then
thank God for my brother, Jeff. And I don't know if he's listening or not, but Jeff's throws from short center would always have an arc on them.
Well, yeah, you just give. You don't need to throw an arc to be releasing
him. Jeff, yeah. Let's put it this way. The O'Neill boys were not known for their, their rocket arms.
Well, at least it ran in the family.
Which by the way, I get to put mine on display for the first time in a few years.
What are you doing?
A couple Fridays from now, I will be throwing out the first pitch at the South Bend Cubs game.
Really?
Really?
Yeah.
No, don't be some weenie.
Our college's night there, and so they asked me to throw out the first pitch, and I am going to try to do better than that one White Sox employee did about 4 or 5 weeks ago.
Wait a minute, you got to get it there in a fly.
Well, I don't know if you know the reference I'm making, but
no.
You can find it on YouTube. Matt can find it and post it, or Sick Jack on it. They had a White Sox Employee of the Month in you know where the photographer stands to take a picture while you're throwing out the first pitch?
Yeah, you almost hit him, or her, didn't he?
You did hit him.
Yeah, you hit him.
Hit him square in the camera.
Hit him.
Hit him square in the camera.
She beamed the guy. It was, you know, it may be the all-time worst first pitch ever thrown.
He hit the ball.
So I'm sure I can do better than that, but not necessarily by much.
But at least he has some speed on it.
First baseman, they hit the ball to me in a double play situation, and it was either, you know, Kevin, let's just get the force, take your time, or just take the out at first.
Oh, yeah.
because if we're going to rush this, the ball's going to left field.
Well, Kevin, what we were talking about before the break is that you used to kind of see this, well, certainly in the OEX pit, which at one point had pushing 350 people, that, you know, pretty much all made a living. Some people did very, very well. Some people, you know, a few people always kind of lost, I guess, but you get this view of the world that's a little bit, in other words, you can get lost on whatever level you're at. And that didn't come out all that right, but what I'm saying is for somebody in that pit, if there's 300,000 contracts a day on average, there's 300 to 350 people that by and large, using their own talents and using their own style, by the end of the year, I'm going to say, have made a living. You know, some guys are brokers. Some ladies are, you know, some people like trade the out months. Some people like trade the near months. You know, whatever it happens to be. But if there's a level of business that A is pretty good and B maybe even is growing, you can support that many people. Now it's very competitive, and somebody has a good day, other guy has a bad day. I mean, that kind of crap happens all day long. But that's okay. But if all of a sudden you start going, you know, 270,000 contracts a day, and then all of a sudden you see the next year there's, you know, 280 people in there or 275, and now it's a real struggle just to have a good month, much less a good day type of thing, and then you start to drain down. If you don't have that kind of, I'll say, you know, if the product isn't vibrant, I mean, so what I say on the levels, when you have the states, which you articulately put together, if Illinois is basically bleeping up and Indiana can benefit from that and people move it, you need that vibrancy, okay, in the economy. You need people competing. And when people are competing, somebody's always doing a little better than the other guy, which makes the other guy try harder, come up with a new idea, build a new plant, build a better-looking restaurant, whatever it is. That's the whole vibrancy of the economy that we're searching for. But if you're up over that, when I say if you're in the Oval Office or someplace, or if you're in the Senate or at a House, you know, the House, all they seem to care about is their own states. At the end of the day, at the end of the decade, if you don't have the equivalent of 15 auto plants when you used to have 13 or 14, but certainly not 11 or 12, you're starting to fight and you're starting to eat yourself. You know what I'm saying? Where if you start making money on the trader next to you because you noticed the market was going up and he didn't, that's not sustainable because the next day he's going to get you, right? Well, my point is if you don't have this all-encompassing real growth that you actually put a number on and you don't fake it by playing with your inflation numbers and things like that, where you actually have real growth where you can point to the guy whose family was making $50,000 4 years ago in Chicago, and now the guy's making $55,000 without the taxes and inflation making it worth $45,000 where it actually, he's actually up a G or up two G's to where maybe you can actually put a couple of bucks in the bank and say, if you're not getting there, all the other stuff, even though it's positive for your area and negative for another, which I'm saying is not that, it's not like that's unhealthy, it is healthy. All that stuff, in the end of the day, you know, you're not getting anywhere as a group, is what I'm saying. And that's where I think we're stuck.
Well, yeah, it's not, but I'll throw in one other dimension to that, and that's the old adage that if you have to face a cannibal, best that it be in the mirror.
Yeah,
The idea being that it may be that, you know, Indiana's stealing it from Illinois, but it's better than, you know, some country in Southeast Asia stealing it from Illinois.
Well, no, my reference to the pit was, is if there's business, good business every day and growing business, you can have a horrible month, you can come back. I'm saying if all of a sudden Matty Weber's hot dog stand down the block does better than mine, as long as there's good demand for hot dogs, hey, screw it, I'll go to the bank, I'll fix this place up, I'll have better hot dogs, and maybe next month will be my month. But if, you know what I'm saying, if there's a growth there, there's room for everybody. And on a given day...
I hear what you're saying. I get that. And but even if there's not growth, you still want to keep it in-house, keep it in the country.
Right. Well, because I was reading these articles about these new car prices, and they've got... The new car prices are back. They're actually, this year, I think they're like $34,000, the median price. Like, wow. But the median note is now pushing 7 years, and it's like 32 or 31. Kevin, name me, if your median household income is 54, who the hell can afford, when I say a $34,000 car, how can those two median numbers be there's no way that family. Now, I guess you can have your sights on the future, and you can get this 7 or 7.5, can you get more net loan, and you can go out and do that, but wow. I mean, I don't know how that makes 5 years from now, if those numbers stay the way they are and they're trending the way they're trending. I don't see 5 years from now how you're selling 17 million vehicles, which it seems like you want to be able to sell to keep that industry, even if they're smaller and electric and God knows what. I mean, whatever all that stuff is, I don't see how you grow with those numbers like that. I mean, do you?
Well, so is again, you know, let's just say that the prices are up for all good reasons, and all good reasons means, you know, better quality car, more safety features, and that one of them is that it genuinely will last a longer time.
That, which they will.
That,
yeah.
That taking that 7-year note is not crazy anymore, theoretically, because because your car is still good after 7 years. Your unit sales are not going to go up, but is that a good thing for the economy, or is that a bad thing for the economy?
Well, I think if it works, and there's part of that. There's some of that in there. Cars do last longer. I get it. But if the car that lasted 4 years when you and I were coming out of college, they were $4,000. Now there's some, you know, now they last 7, but they're not like they're $8,000, Kevin, or 34. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I mean, you can do whatever you want with numbers. I mean, we do that all the time.
No, that's why I said, you know, sort of threw in that theoretically.
Well, is there?
I don't know the components of the price increase 100%. I don't know how much is inflation. I don't know how much is demand. I don't know how much is better product. But there's components of each in there.
And now you can fake it. I read this, I have it someplace, although I don't run them off as much anymore, my brother was accusing me of killing trees. There was an article regarding, this is where I need an assistant, Kevin. If you want, if you really dig, you can go back through the CPI. And, you know, those guys, they're nothing but not detailed. I mean, they're seriously detailed. Actually, in front of me, in my hot little grimy hand, the last couple of years, the improvements in the F-150. So you can, I believe that if you go back to like 2010, according to the CPI, the price of a pickup truck has not gone up at all, the way they calculated. And yet, if you look at just the manufacturer's retail price of the base model in 2010 versus now, it's up like 40%.
So you can, I would say if the average sale is higher, But that's because people are buying more options, then maybe the price of a pickup hasn't gone up. The thing is, you can't buy the car without the option.
Right. So, well, but plus, I think they're pretty generous.
The amount you're going to pay for it is higher. No two ways about it.
But I actually found a page, and I'm dealing from memory here. The price of the pickup was up, say, $800. And one of the things on there was, I think it might have been power mirrors or something, Kevin, is now standard, and that's $250. And then there was a license plate holder that you get in the front now, whatever. There's some states you only need one license plate, so the actual license plate holder in the front is, you know, $20 or $25 or something. Well, now that's standard. So they actually ate up, you know, like $650 worth of the pickup of the $800 price increase with these, quote, and was it 2 years ago? A lot of these guys went to the backup camera, and that's like $500,
yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah.
But, so, I mean, yeah, would you like to have a backup camera? Well, yeah. I mean, especially if you got little kids and dogs and got a driveway where yeah, I mean, it's, even though you'd like to turn around and look, the fact is it makes it more idiot-proof, it's safer, I get it. But still, if I'm a guy, I live by myself on a logging road, why do I got to pay for that? I mean, the fact is, the truck's up 40%, right?
Well, would you like to have a backup camera? My question would normally be, how much?
Yeah.
Well,
I mean,
cost?
I mean, but you can.
And but the thing is, if it's not optional, then the price of the truck has gone up. You can, you know, frame it however, you know, anybody can frame it however they want. But the fact is, price of the truck has gone up.
Right.
That's inflation.
Well, and they will actually say, I mean, that's why when you look at these numbers all over the place, I mean, I get the part where you can't compare on a qualitative level. Well, maybe you can. Our Notre Dame education versus today. So, okay, say my senior year, which I didn't have to pay room and board because I was an RA, but say if I would have had to pay room and board, that was like $1,200 for the year. And the tuition was, I'm going to say, 34 or something, or 3 or something. The total value of the deal was under 3,500, I think, or in the mid threes. And, okay, we stayed in some kind of a crummy dorm room, and now they just spent how many bazillion dollars on our dorm, so the rooms are bigger. You go to dinner instead of either chicken or mystery meat, which we pretty much had every night. But you know what? It wasn't bad food. There was, you know, eggs and bacon.
Oh, a lot of it was.
Well, I'm saying it's not something we would have said we proudly cooked, but you know, there was breakfast, lunch, and dinner. There were burgers, there were shrimp every Friday, there was steak once a week. I mean, it wasn't like it was horrible. Guys that came from Marquette that lived in an Evans house that didn't have any food thought we were crazy to complain. They go, God, if I can walk over here every night and get dinner instead of going to get the 49-cent sandwiches, I mean, I'd be in heaven.
Yeah,
you know, but now.
I lived off campus a couple of years. I knew what that was like.
But now you walk in there and you go, I'm going into a five-star restaurant. There's the Mexican turnaround. There's the Asian turnaround. There's the Sunday bar. There's a salad bar. I mean, last time I was there for a reunion, I couldn't believe it. It's like going to 8 different restaurants all in the same place. Now, we didn't have 100 doctors. We didn't have psychologists. I mean, if somebody was messed up, somebody helped you. But we didn't have any of that stuff. Now, obviously, the price, if I put my tuition in the CPI calculator, it comes out at about 17 grand, Kevin, and yet the price is 75. Now, all right, I'm going to say that some of that stuff, I guess I don't mind paying for a little better chow. I guess if the dorm is, you know, a sprinkler system, it's probably better in case somebody sets the place on fire. I mean, some of the stuff you can get, but still the gap between 17 and 75, when one is affordable and one isn't, we're not even on the same planet. So I don't know how I'm not saying it should be 17. I'm saying even with the improvements, I'll go with 25, you know, or 30, but I'm not going to go with 75. I mean, and you know, that's, and say like it's the same number. No, it's not.
Well, and you know, as you turn that back around too, and now and start to look at it critically, and you say, you know, how can you justify that expense when there are really, really good alternatives? Even if you think it's the best education in the world, you know, is now is the fifth best good enough for 70% of the price?
Well, but you know,
is just really good what you need for half the price or less. You know, I think that, you know, that becomes the value proposition of this, and then we just prop it up by funding it and saying, well, we'll just put, you know, we'll put the money out there. I was talking earlier about, you know, different kinds of grants and things like that. That's all available. It's all there. And that's going to keep tuition up.
Well, you also can't be, in my opinion, you should get the colleges totally out of that game. I mean, you don't go into a grocery store and say, give me some steaks, how much are they? Wait a minute, that's not a fair question. How much you got? Well, the steaks are $40 a pound. What do you mean 40? Well, they're $40 a pound. You got it or don't you? Well, yeah, I don't have
it. Show me what's in your wallet.
Yeah, if you got the 40, okay, here. Well, if you don't have it, hey, we got some people over there that'll help you out, and maybe they'll give you a discount card, and they'll be like 30 for you. Right? I mean, it's unconscionable. If you have any sort of how markets should work and how, I mean, the idea to have a different price for every person who walks in the door, essentially like a college has, it's unconscionable, Kevin. I mean, it should never be that way. The colleges shouldn't be the people giving out the loans.
There is no economic basis for it.
No. And plus, it's sticky. You know, I have 30 seconds. It's very sticky because you can't, because you're enough a terrier, you might be able to. By and large, it would be impossible for you to grab, you know, Tilden Tech, which is about to close here in Chicago, or CVS or someplace, remodel a place, put professors the same caliber as Notre Dame or DePaul, and just have it a commuter school and get the accreditation and all the accolades that these other places get. You'll never get it. You know, law school, hire people out of there. It's very, very sticky. Thank you, Kevin. SP Futures down 650. NASDAQ Futures down 16. We'll come back with Mr. Russell Rhodes.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Markets close to all-time highs, interest rates close to all-time lows. Investors are nervous, no return on cash balances, may have some invested a little too much for comfort, some not invested at all, earning very little. The market itself seems nervous. Experts say you should protect yourself. Experts say you should never sell. Experts say to get out right now, yet they are all experts. Then again, they do not know you or your situation. There are also some strange things going on at brokerage and investment advisor firms. Some solid clients and even some diligent brokers and investment advisors are being tossed out. Not big enough, don't charge enough, whatever the reason. This may leave you in a place where there literally is no one knowledgeable left to talk to if needed. PTI Securities and Futures is still here. Either here at our Chicago home office or in Arizona with John Neal, we still believe in servicing clients and providing a home for the right brokers or investment advisors the old-fashioned way. We are competitive, but we are also available to help. The last few years have seen a straight-up market without the need of a lot of investment help. What about this year or next year? If things change in the markets, do you really think you are ready? We also have a long history of designing and managing portfolios for people just like you. It might be good for you to check us out at PTISecurities.com. It's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, this is John Neal from PTI Securities and Futures and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, as well as the branch manager of our Peoria, Arizona location. I hope you, like many of our listeners, have benefited from the outstanding market returns of the last several years. But have you recently become unsettled due to the worldwide geopolitical uncertainty, the increased volatility of commodities and currencies, or the looming Federal Reserve interest rate hikes? If you have answered yes to any of these questions, we can help you. Here at PTI, we offer a unique variety of income-producing securities as well as our proprietary hedging program to protect your assets. More information about these exciting programs and much more can be obtained from our website at ptisecurities.com or feel free to email me at john@ptisecurities.com. That's john@ptisecurities.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Allen. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Jack Silverman helping him out. We have S&P futures down 6.25. We've got NASDAQ futures down 14. We should have Mr. Russell Rhodes here in a minute, unless he is off somewhere on a trip someplace that he didn't let us know about. But he's usually right as rain. Today will be interesting, and I think they go in front of the House first. I will check that out, but I think the House is the first day, then the Senate. So it'll be interesting whether both sides give the chairman a bunch of grief. He makes a statement, and I think they're, you know, if they're off and if there's any kind of give, we're talking about a quarter point. They're back up growing the money supply a little too fast, in my opinion. The last 13 weeks was 4.7% M2. So, I mean, they're back being, you know, fairly accommodative. But, I mean, to be perfectly blunt, there is an issue with what people are doing around the world. And, you know, Draghi and some of these guys, it's very difficult when you're a policy thing. I was talking a little bit earlier about, trading the OEX bit. Well, you know, trading is one of those things. It's kind of like baseball. When you see, you know, Kyle Hendricks have a bad day and they say, well, what happened? And he said, I made a lot of bad pitches. I mean, he looks in the mirror and says, hey, you know, it's not like a Major League Baseball player can't hit a good pitch. I mean, they surely can. But the more you lob up there, the more that aren't good pitches, the more they're going to, take advantage of you. So, but these guys are men of enormous egos. I mean, Draghi is never going to come out on a day he leaves office and say, boy, you know, I've been pushing this policy for 7 years now, this negative interest rates, and, by the way, this policy really sucked. See you guys, try and fix it. I mean, the mentality is just not there. So they'll take credit for things that, you know, you've got really no business taking credit for. Other people in my business, the thing that, you know, there's other people, that's why people get their account statements. I did a terrific job for you, yeah, but, you know, don't look like we're doing so hot. But, I mean, those guys, they get to be their own judge. And, you know, even Matty Weber.
Judge, jury, and executioner.
I mean, I asked Matty Weber this morning, how good you are. I got two hits. Okay, well, 2 out of 3 is a darn nice night. And it's not like, well, I was terrific. Well, did you get any hits? Well, no, but, boy, nobody else could have either. This guy was, you know, okay. I mean, it becomes how do you go against the negative? So you've got people now that are absolutely convinced that what saved us out of the 2007 to 2008, and I'm not talking about having to pour money in a system to save the money markets and those kinds of things. That's what the Fed is there to do. But the ongoing, let's keep interest rates at zero and somehow get this money back from this group of society and then pay the other and refloat the banks and those kinds of things. I mean, there's going to be some people that are going to be writing history on this long after I'm gone and saying these guys either were pretty good or they were idiots. And, you know, I'm thinking it, A, they're not idiots, but I think the policy is bad, and they're never going to go back on it saying, oh, well, we never should have done this. We never should have lowered rates below you know, 275. They're going from 1.5 to 3/4. Didn't do anybody any good and may have done harm. I mean, can you imagine a policy guy making that statement, man? You might get somebody from another party someday saying this, but both parties have done it. It was 8 years under Democrats and now 3 under Republicans. They're both done it. Now we got a guy trying to go back there, even though he says the economy's fine, which is really the spot you don't want to be. I mean, we got to have negative interest rates. Yeah, but you just said everything's fine. It doesn't matter. That's why it's fine. Okay. So we're only going to be fine if we have interest rates down to where savers make the money and banks make it all. Well, yeah. Well, that's not so hot. Maddie, what are your guys, when you started at your place, just a bunch of guys, you know, that were younger and you were with the young group, but now you're with the executive group.
Not quite.
You're upper, you're middle.
Yeah, I'm middle.
All right, so you got guys that are getting married or in their 30s. They're worried about, they probably have some kind of a 401k now that actually has some money in it.
Yeah.
What's
and over the last, I would say 5 or 6 years, that's really gone up, the old 401k.
What are most guys in?
Most guys are just in your standard sort of indexes that, I don't know, like a standard index package. There's not a lot of guys that actively, you know, go in there and trade their account. That's pretty much it. And then some guys are a little more advanced and have some other stuff going or might have some funds on the side. And then I have like an HSA and a couple of little mutual funds that I put money into that are a little more aggressive.
Okay, so the market is, I mean, I would guess that your group probably is in some, maybe in a high-tech area, probably high growth.
Yeah.
And that area has been, by and large, I mean, if you've been in those stocks, the FANG stocks, you've totally outperformed, you know, the rest of the world. You know, I know that I'm doing a protect index stuff for a lot of people, and even just this year, the people that are in the QQQ have done it amazingly better than the people in the Russell. You know, so it's what you pick. I mean, if you pick the oil industry, I mean, you're sucking the wrong end.
Yeah.
I mean, God help you if you're in, you know, stuff like 3M, which is, you know, 220 down to 160. And, you know, you're talking about, and when you see some, you know, buffoon on TV pounding the table going, great management, sound this, you know, growth over a period of time, solid dividends. Well, you're talking about 3M, and it's down 30% in the last year. You know, so all the stuff you hear, I mean, it's, you know, the part that keeps getting narrower and narrower is sort of bothered me for a long time, but it doesn't matter. But the nice thing is you have an index like the Q where you don't really have to pick one of the fangs. You don't have to say, well, I'm going to pick Google or I'm going to pick Facebook or something. What do you think about from your level, knowing more about it than me, what do you think about the fact that if you ask people about Facebook, and I'll get the exact numbers here, they'll say, God, these guys are kind of in trouble. The European people are pissed at them, and people here are pissed at them. I mean, everybody's pissed at them, and yet I'm going to say the stock has done enough to go straight up this year. So, I mean, is it one of those that if you were a money manager, would you be real happy about putting people's stuff in there, or would you be afraid of it? I look at it almost like there's like the tobacco companies 25 years ago. I mean, I don't want to be involved, and yet, God, for the first 20 years of my investment existence, if you just would have put money in a tobacco company, you'd do better than anybody else.
Well, it's dependent upon whether you're looking long-term or short-term. I think short-term in Facebook, if you have the dough, is probably not a bad play. Like you said, the stock is strong, and they have, you know, a ton of users. Long-term, I don't think Facebook is a good long-term play. I just don't. I don't see the young people using it at all. When I say young, I'm talking like teenagers, early 20s. They're not using Facebook. There's so many other social media avenues that they prefer. And, you know, a lot of the older people that tried it, you know, maybe have an account but don't really use it. It's more, you know, Facebook started with my generation. Mark Zuckerberg's my age. We're the same class. Like, we
stock started the year 137, actually 131, and now it's 199.
Yeah, so like the founding people of Facebook were the people that were literally exactly my age, that you had to have a college email address you know, at the beginning, and then it ballooned into this huge thing. We're the ones that are still on Facebook because we started it. We were the first ones on Facebook back in, you know, early 2000s, and even we're getting kind of bored with it. So I don't see it as a long term play at all.
Well, have they successfully morphed? When I say this, the 2 days you left me with the two girls, Jay-Z and her friend Emma, they claim that the Facebook is so ingrained into the population of DePaul that you couldn't go to school there without it. I mean, have they been successful enough to do that in a lot of places, or is DePaul somewhat, I mean, you know, maybe not the school itself, but virtually all changes in class, you know, schedule, I'm not going to say grading, but anything that had to do with any of her sororities or any of that kind of stuff. And if you didn't have Facebook, if you weren't on it, you pretty much, you know, you might as well not join.
Yeah, I mean, there's probably something to that. I don't run into that. I mean, but that is helpful if you don't have, if you have a particular group. I don't think it has anything to do with the school, but if you have a particular group that's, you know, like some sort of club or some sort of sorority thing or fraternity thing or whatever, and you don't have everyone's email address in a database, or saved within your email server, then Facebook is a very easy way to gather a group of people because, you know, everyone has a Facebook account, and you can very quickly set up a page and or an event, and you can quickly invite, you know, dozens or hundreds of people, and it's synced with their calendar via their Facebook account, and it's very easy to do that. Totally get that. But I don't know how, you know, huge that is because, you know, my age group, you know, when we send out an invite to some sort of event or whatever, we use an Evite. So it's essentially the same thing, except it's via your email and has nothing to do with social media.
I think that's what they do at Columbia. Where I don't know if it's an Evite, but they have a internal like email system where that Eric uses over at Columbia. They haven't gone down the Facebook thing. Now maybe some clubs over there have.
Oh, I'm sure I think it's much more of a club thing. I don't think the schools are doing it. I mean, maybe a professor here and there utilizes it, but I think it's definitely a club thing.
So why is the stack up 40% this year? Is it just people have confidence that whatever the new thing is, they got enough money to buy it?
Well, the reason why, in my opinion, the good thing about Facebook, and I've used it for this function, is there is no better way to advertise your business than on Facebook.
Really?
Yes. I mean, it's not even close. I mean, if you pay for an ad, it's very affordable. You can target that ad very specifically to the demographic that you want based on where they live, what their interests are, their age, their sex, their all that stuff. I mean, it's very targeted, and it works. If you have a product that you get in front of people that would be interested in your product, it pops up in front of them every single day, and it's very easy for them to click and buy instantly. So from an advertising perspective, Facebook is better than any other social media, in my opinion.
But what does it cost you?
So you can do it for as little as $5 a day, or, you know, and you're going to reach a certain amount of people. It's completely dependent on the amount of people you want to get in front of. So if you tell them, I want to get in front of 1,000 people for the next 7 days, it might only cost you $25. If you want to get in front of, you know, 100,000 people for the next month or whatever, then, you know, it might cost you $500.
Now, when you say get in front of, if I...
The ad is literally going to pop up when they log into Facebook, when they're scrolling through their timeline.
All right, so if I... we'll keep names out of this, but Matt works for a firm that does credit card
cybersecurity.
Cybersecurity. So if for instance, you know, Chief's Restaurant and Bistro obviously takes credit cards. So if I'm a Facebook guy, which I probably am, if I get Chief's Bistro, you can go in there and find somehow you can get a list of all the people that have, you know, bistros over the size of a corner saloon. And for the next 6 months, every time I turn my Facebook on, I'm going to get an ad from your place saying, you can do me a better job of my credit card security than the next guy.
Yes.
And I can't turn that off.
No, it's, and they built it into the framework, so it doesn't really feel like you're getting peppered with ads. I mean, basically, you know, when you log into your Facebook or your Twitter or your Instagram, any one of those, you essentially have a timeline for with all the people that you follow and or are friends with, depending on the platform. And you kind of scroll through and, you know, you look at the pictures and you might read their posts, and some of it you might find interesting and you might like it or comment on it, and then some of it, you know, you scroll past and you don't give it a second thought. Well, what they do is they just place that ad in the same exact format as if someone posted a picture. So you automatically look at it, and it doesn't feel like intrusive. And it's maybe,
but if there's 100 of them,
well, working. They space them out to the point where, you know, I think it's at most maybe one every 10. So you might look at 10 real posts from your people you follow, and then you'll have a sponsored post. And it's labeled sponsored, so you know it's there. But it's so seamless and it looks so natural that it doesn't really offend you, you know, that much. Now, if you, like you said, if they started doing that every 5 or every 7, or maybe it would start to be intrusive. But how they do it right now, it's not too bad. And your ad is, you can target your ad so much that, you know, you're really hoping, and if you do it right, you're really showing it to people that want to see it. You know, if you're selling, I'm trying to think of a good example. If you're selling, Chicago Bulls, like, you know, clothing, and you target, you know, men in the Chicago area age 16 to 36 that like the Chicago Bulls, that like basketball, that, you know, whatever, that post about basketball, that play basketball, whatever, when they see that, it's awesome. They're like, oh, wow, cool, Chicago Bulls stuff. And then they click on it because it's not intrusive at all. It's something they would want to see. And they can target the ads that specifically.
Is that why something like LinkedIn doesn't seem to get anywhere, because there's no ads on it?
I mean, that's probably why. And LinkedIn is a subscription service. So you have the free service, which gives you, you know,
yeah,
a profile, but it doesn't give you much more than
you
that.
You can get some emails in there and so forth.
I tell you what, so I'm like the last person on earth that's in sales that doesn't have a LinkedIn. And I don't want people at work knowing everything about me and knowing, you know, being able to message me and get a hold of me at all times. But I also have people on my team and, you know, people above me at my company and partners and customers that swear by it and say, you know, they've gotten all of their jobs through it. They get, you know, it's very good for business, for networking, creating relationships. It's very good for, you know, when you're a salesperson and you have partners and trying to move up in the organization, if you can only get to the manager level and you're having trouble getting conversations with decision makers, it's very helpful to kind of know how the organization is laid out and who you need to reach out to and so on and so forth. And I get that. So it works in that regard, but you got to pay for it, and it's a subscription.
Yeah, well,
your company is not paying it for you.
Yeah, I'm in a level where I don't pay, but I can just get some. I couldn't find somebody else. They could come for me if they want.
Yeah.
And you get messages in there, but.
Yeah, and I don't even have that. But as far as ads are concerned, someone would have to write in, you know, Stocks and Jocks on Twitter or email us, stocksandjocks@live.com. I don't know, if there's ads or if they're successful or not within there, because I don't use it.
Well, and you know, people are obviously very aware that I never give investment advice on the air, and we can talk generally about the market, but if somebody calls in or tweets in, I mean, I'm never going to say you should buy this stock. I mean, there's no way you can do that because I'm registered all over the place. But so all emails and stuff, we have a whole policy here of keeping all emails. Well, if I were to start texting to my clients, I mean, you can do that, but you better have a whole, you know, system behind you to gather those up, because those are now communication to customers.
And those get audited.
And those, well, no, yeah.
Right.
So I just don't do it. I mean,
yeah, I don't blame you.
And, so, I mean, if I were the interesting part about the LinkedIn.
What about phone calls?
Well, that'll be next, huh? You can't talk
to somebody. So then you're going to have to record all your phone calls.
Well, the bureaucratic mind, it's, you know, at some point, in their mind, let's see, if an email has to be kept, if a letter has to be kept, why does a conversation not have to be kept?
Yeah.
In their mind. Yet in your mind, in my mind, maybe the first two shouldn't be kept. People get to talk to people.
I agree.
You know, and
I agree.
And so I mean, there's a lot of stuff that's going on in this country right now that you know, a lot of arbitrations, a lot of lawsuits, a lot of, you know, crazy crap in my mind, where we haven't figured out what privacy is yet, and you know, and it's getting worse and worse. I mean, and And we haven't figured out, you know, what people's rights are to invade your space with marketing ads. I mean, I personally don't want to walk down the street in my lifetime where on everybody's ass is a Coca-Cola ad, you know, but there's other people who think that that's okay. I mean, the guy who is, they're having a, I think it's 50 years since Bo Schembechler's national championship team. So I think Michigan people are having a big 50-year anniversary from it, from what I understand. One of my buddies was going up there, I know, but
1969, is that right?
I think it was, yeah. And but he, you know, Bo would not let an ad in the Michigan Stadium. People, that's what people do for a living. They come here, they buy a ticket, they want to escape from a while, they want to watch football.
Wrigley didn't have ads forever.
Right.
I mean, except for, like, the Budweiser and stuff across the street. Right. But in the stadium, there was, like, nothing.
Right. Because, you know, I mean, I think...
And that wasn't even that long ago.
Right. And but, I mean, the idea that you pay $200 to go to a Bulls game or whatever, and those obnoxious, incredibly loud ads that drive you nuts every break, if you go back, you know, my grandfather didn't go to movies, but if he did, the thought of him ponying up his 50 cents to see a movie and the first thing he saw was a commercial. Well, there wasn't TV back then, but when there was, he'd say, that's why I came to the movie, I don't have to watch the commercials, right?
Yeah.
And now people now don't think anything of it. So,
well, there's no doubt we've been inundated with advertisements and marketing basically for the last 50 years and probably longer. And so it does become a part of society, but it can be over the top. I mean, when commercials are too long, you know, I lose interest very quickly. And with the attention span, there's sometimes I want to watch a video on YouTube and the 10-second ad at the beginning, I can't make it through that. And I'm like, well, I'm not going to watch the video. So right. they actually lose my view for that. And that's just the 10-second ad. I really have to want to watch the video to sit through the ad.
Well, yeah, it reaches the point where it, and then you find ways, you know, around it. But I mean, the live sports events, I really find, I mean, I know you give me grief about it, but for me, you know, getting up when I do in the morning to do the show and everything, I mean, you obviously get up too, but for me to sit there by myself at 9:30 in the 8th inning of a Cub game, commercial after commercial, pitching change after pitching change, and try and stay awake. If I was 18, maybe I could, but, or if I'm somewhere with somebody, I'm not going to
dull. I struggle with that too. There's no doubt. When you get up early, like we do, and then, like you said, the Cubs game starts at 7:05. The first six innings usually zip by in an hour and a half, and then all of a sudden the last three innings can take 2 hours.
Yeah,
and you know, it's pitching changes, it's, you know, guys shaking guys off, mound visits, you know, lots of walks, you name it, all that stuff happens, and the last three innings last longer than the first six innings. And that happens all the time. And when it's a weeknight and it's all of a sudden 10:15, and it's very difficult, no doubt.
Well, they've cut back a little bit in college. I used to go on some of the Notre Dame games.
Well, college football games are the worst.
I was going to say college basketball, they've cut back from some of the, it used to be that, there's a break every 4 minutes.
Still.
Yep. So there's five. And each team gets, it was something like 12 or 15 times when you take the two halves, you get like six and a half or something. I mean, if everybody used all of it, it was something like 28 or 29 delays in a 40-minute game.
Yeah.
I mean, it's only 40 minutes.
It's crazy. The only nice thing is that college basketball, no matter what, is going to be done in 2 hours.
Pretty much, yeah.
I mean, even though there are a lot of breaks and the every 4-minute timeout is a bit excessive, in my opinion, but that's just kind of how it's always been, or at least it's been in my lifetime.
Well, it's been since TV.
Yeah, but man, college football, those games last 4 hours, and it's ridiculous.
Yep.
It is absolutely, college football is the worst. The clock doesn't need to stop every single first down. I mean, come on. I mean, that's ridiculous. The NFL, you know, is still, like you always say, 12 minutes of action, and then the rest is a lot of, you know, lining up and commercials and standing around. But at least the game's over at 3 hours flat every time. I mean, they have it down to a science.
They've been starting to creep.
Very rarely. I mean, they pretty much have it down to a science. The noon games are over at 3 o'clock or 3:10, and then the afternoon games kick off at 3:15, and it's pretty much like dead on. College football, I don't know, they could shorten that up for me. I love baseball. I know Joel on Tuesday said he's done with baseball, and he said it's too boring. And a lot of people feel that way. A lot of young people have no interest in baseball. The young people are all about the NBA and soccer, from my experience. And I'm talking the really young people.
This NBA now, where the the inmates are running the asylum, where they form teams, not the teams. I got an issue with that. I mean the idea that the this year's champion is 100-1 to win next year now because two guys decided to go play somewhere else.
Well, two guys are out for the year for injury.
No,
it doesn't matter that they're going somewhere else. They're not playing anywhere.
No, I'm talking about Toronto.
Oh, Toronto. Yeah, I'm still talking about Golden State.
Yeah, yeah. The I'm not saying the guy shouldn't be able to go.
Well, my point was is that I still really like baseball. I watch the Cubs pretty much every game. I mean, I literally asked, you can ask Jill. Probably not her favorite thing. She's actually a White Sox fan, but. I watch 150 games. I mean, I really watch pretty much every game, and I love it.
I will watch some of virtually every game,
but a lot of people don't. They find it boring and they don't like it, and they find it too slow and not enough action, and they don't appreciate the strategy, and they don't appreciate the flow of a season where it's 6 months and you really kind of get to know a team and you get to know the broadcasters and there's a rhythm to it and you kind of. You know, you live with the highs and lows of a long season, and it's very rewarding when you have a good team that makes the playoffs, and that's why I'm very, very appreciative that the Cubs have made the playoffs 5 years in a row.
Oh, yeah, I'm too.
It's incredible. But people want that quick NBA, soccer, you know, up and down.
Well, soccer's not quick.
Well, soccer's quick in that there's no stoppage. I mean, it's 45-minute halves of nonstop. It's just the American, you know, a lot of Americans
find it
boring.
It's the same 45 minutes...
But there's no stop. But to your, right, but it's the one sport where you can't say they stand. I mean, they literally the ball is in play for 45 straight
baseball,
minutes.
You've gone from, in my lifetime, a 2-hour and 40-minute game to a 3.5-hour game, and the amount of action is the same. That's a trend. You can't go to 440 or 540.
Agreed.
I mean, at some point,
and they know that.
Luckbox Magazine, your guide to money and probability, is available on newsstands for $7.99 per issue. Stocks and Jacks listeners receive a free digital subscription at luckboxmagazine.com/Jacks. S&P futures down 5.25. They were down 8. NASDAQ futures down only down 10. So they're coming back just like yesterday. We'll come back a little bit. And we'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for
stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now. Right now.
Hello, everybody. Stocks and jocks. I'm Tom Al. Matt Weber on the board. Jack Silverman helping him out. Actually, Matt Weber is a co-host today because we don't know what happened to Russell. Hopefully, he's good. S&P futures are down. Up 750 is, I think, Paul just released his speech that he's going to talk about, and he's got something in there about cross currents. He essentially is setting a stage for a race cut. He's talking about the cross currents are weighing on the economic outlook, so Fed will act as appropriate. So people are taking that to be dovish, meaning bullish, meaning I don't know if cross currents are good. It means the economy's not doing as well as maybe people thought. So that's evidently a positive for the market in the days we are now living. So S&P futures up 675, NASDAQ futures up 3625. I'll get the latest down number. The Dow's got to be positive here as well. But let's go do Europe and Asia first. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX still down 59.4%, FTSE down 4, it's flat, CAC around up 3. I'm going to guess the DAX will probably run positive here pretty soon after those announcements. Asia, however, they're not going anywhere because they're closed. Nikkei down 31, call that flat. Shanghai down 12.4%, Hang Seng up 31, up 88.31%. Oil, kind of the big news of the morning, up $1.30, $59.43. Ran up $1.51, $65.67. Gold down $6.50, $13.94. And if they start cutting rates, I'm thinking gold will probably go back up the other way, because that's what's happening with that. We have the 10-year is 2.05. It was 2.09 we came in. So it's dropped a little bit this morning with this. He must have sent out his at least preliminary speech in front of Congress. What do you guys got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. We have a couple of issues that have surfaced here in the last several minutes. First, we'll start on the south side. We have an accident on the Dan Ryan Express lanes northbound just before 35th Street, right by the ballpark there. There's a crash blocking the left lane. This has traffic in a standstill as folks are waiting to navigate around that crash. So keep that in mind if you're coming in on the Ryan. No issues on the Bishop Ford or I-57 at this point. Stevenson and Eisenhower traffic building, and we also have a crash out in the western burbs on the Eisenhower. It's been moved to the right shoulder. It's on the westbound side at Wolf Road. Not affecting the inbound Eisenhower, but three vehicles involved on the outbound side. Again, crash has been moved to the shoulder, but expect a slowdown if you're heading westbound on I-290. Northside expressways are looking okay on the Edens and Kennedy. Traffic volumes are building, but no accidents or issues to report. Only other crash on the radar right now is on the north side up in Ravenswood. Foster Avenue at Ravenswood Avenue, there is a crash. Everything else looking okay out there. Weather today, hot and steamy, a high of 94 with some sunshine. Could have some stray showers in the afternoon and evening. Right now it's mostly clear and 78 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunshine with a high of 112 today. Right now it's clear and 81. In sports, American League topped the National League for the seventh straight year in the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. 4-3 was the final last night from Cleveland. Shane Bieber of the Indians was your MVP. Cubs and Sox were mostly quiet outside of James McCann going 1-for-1 and Lucas Giolito. I don't know why I always call him Nicholas. Lucas Giolito with a solid inning pitch of one strikeout and one walk.
Maybe he looks like a Nicholas.
I don't know. Back to you, Chief.
It looks like the Powell testimony. Now, of course, they're going to do a lot of questioning. So what they usually do is he gives a preliminary talk, and then he gets a bunch of questions, and he kind of does the same thing tomorrow in the Senate. But the news is usually the first day. And some of the people that are representatives sometimes lob questions at the chairman that, shall we say, are a little less filtered than some of the senators will do. But, you know, we'll see that. We'll have to watch it.
Do any of them know what they're talking about?
Some do. I mean, and the ones that do, that ask the poignant questions, a lot of times don't get answered.
Yeah.
You know, there was one guy that always asked with Janet Yellen what she paid for all the mortgages. She never answered the question.
Wasn't that our guy Pedro?
No,
he asked something else.
He asked, what about the front running?
Yeah.
And she was
there. He got tossed.
But he wasn't a congressman.
Right.
I mean, she can't get a congressman tossed. But what you do is
he should be a congressman.
Well, yeah, he should be. What was our lady who was on? Was it Shirley Atkinson?
We've had her on a couple of times, yes.
And she was saying that not only are a lot of the people, you know, not maybe as bright as you would think they would be in that spot, but they're also there, they just want to be there.
In the Congress?
Well,
spot?
No,
or the
people
reporters?
People in the press room. And you're never going to find...
Well, I don't think that they're necessarily not that bright. I just think that they're not experts in, you know, economic policy necessarily. And so they're the ones asking the questions. So they might have a couple of bullet points, but they don't really know how to dig deep and certainly probably don't have the skill set to ask follow-up questions when you're talking about economic policy.
Well, they have their question and they're going to ask it no matter what.
Right. They have their one question that's maybe good, maybe not, but there probably isn't a lot of depth behind that.
Well, I mean... I try not to do that on the show, but if he came out and said, well, you know, there's a massive asteroid heading for, like, New York, you know, the next dummy, male or female, would say, so what do you think about the inflation rate? Wait a minute, there's not going to be an inflation rate in 2 hours, you idiot. Where'd that question? I mean, you never see, and I think Cheryl mentioned this, you'll never see, you know, the how many fat guys can dance on the end of a pin. Well, Janet Yellen was terrific at dancing until the 5 minutes were up or 3 minutes were up for that congressman or a reporter. And you never see them say, I have a question for you, but I'm not going to say it until you answer the guy before me, because, by the way, I don't think you did. You're never going to see that, unfortunately. Or have a follow-up on the guy before him, because they want their own. They've already prepared the question they think that the people in their district want is the best. And I especially like, I mean, if I ever was in Congress and became a committee chair, Maddie, I would do it just for one reason, just to be a bleep. Anybody who got up and walked out after their question and didn't listen to the other people, make it look like my committee actually gave a crap, I would say you're off.
Yeah. I agree with you. That's, talk about a classless move.
What we're talking about, if you ever...
And it happens all the time.
If you ever watch these things, every one of the Senate House people are going to get their 5 minutes of FaceTime, which, of course, you definitely want to get as a representative or even a senator. Harder to get if you're a representative, because there's 435 of you. But you'll see, when you get to the last guy, there's like the chairman of the committee and the last guy.
Everyone else has already left
everyone
the room.
Everyone's gone. I mean, it's like, they don't even really care. All they care about is their 5 minutes of TV time.
Yeah.
And that, to me, is so rude. I can't even.
They don't even leave a staffer behind to take.
No, I mean, not even, you know, get me out of there, put some good looking person in my seat or something. They don't even do that. There's nothing but empty chairs. And it's like.
They don't have a cardboard sit in or anything.
You know, they should have looked like little mannequins or whatever.
at least looks better on C-SPAN.
Well, when our buddy from the Fed went and testified in front of Congress, by the way, it's on YouTube. I don't have to give everybody his name, which I don't necessarily want to do. But he went and he testified in front of the Agriculture Committee. Well, why might you say, why is he doing that? Well, because a lot of the stuff that's traded on the Board of Trade is, you know, corn, soybeans, all that good stuff, or CME, cattle. I mean, that obviously affects all the stuff the Agricultural Committee is involved in. So being able to hedge your stuff and having an exchange that is alive and doing well. So he was there talking about a piece of the, who were the guys, Dodd-Frank, that, you know, was pretty much screwed up and needed to be changed to allow the like Board of Trade or CME clearing to better access banks and better access the Federal Reserve directly. Because for a while, like I sort of mentioned yesterday, that if the CME clearing had like $100 million overnight extra, no bank would take it. Because the crazy types of things that they were putting through Dodd-Frank on these banks, that actually, since it was considered fast money, it was a hit against capital. You actually had to keep a reserve for somebody giving you money. So, you know, you sit there and say, well, let me get this straight. I can't put my money in a bank. Isn't that what a bank's supposed to do? Right? I mean, it's sort of counterintuitive. So, anyway, he was there talking about that, and I said, hey, you know, these people know anything? He said, well, the chairman surely did. And his staffers, because, you know, they're the ones that asked me out there and everything. He said, they surely did. I mean, they were very well briefed. And maybe a few guys, but then you got to the end of the bench, basically. And there were guys that were, you know, asking me stuff that had nothing to do with anything. I mean, you could see all they cared about was something that in case one of their people at their district happened to see them on C-SPAN or whatever, giving me a quiz, I mean, whatever, asked me how long my beard was. You know, I mean, it really fell off. You know, but this is pretty technical stuff, and I guess, you know, I would doubt very seriously if a freshman rep here is going to go, even though you think you would prepare for it or have a staffer, if you're going to go quiz a guy from the Federal Reserve regarding that stuff. I mean, he said they didn't know anything and didn't care. But the chairman did. You know, so they're not all idiots. And maybe those other guys care about another subject. You know what I mean?
Right.
It's pretty hard it's kind of why you have committees. I mean, the CBOE, when I was on the board, well, actually I was committee chair long before I was on the board. I mean, that is somehow what that's how the system is supposed to work. I mean, if I'm the vice chairman or whatever, and I put, you know, Maddie Weber in charge of, membership, say, I mean, I think Maddie's qualified. I put him there so I don't have to worry about it. You know, the idea is if some really big problem comes up or Maddie sees a rule that he might want to change, well, he's going to run that by me. And say, well, you know, this rule isn't working anymore. What about you? What do you think about this idea? You know, but by and large, I'm not going to go down and read membership applications. That's what I got you for. You know, and I'll put Jack in charge of whatever. Floor officials or something. You know, and there's a guy who knows his way around the floor. He's experienced. He's been in a lot of situations where he had to know the rules, and he proved that he did. And now he's going to select people, and he's going to go through how he wants floor officials. When you give somebody that job, the whole idea is you don't have to worry about it because there's no way you could be worried about all these things. And I mean, the last thing the chairman of the House needs to be doing is going through the nuts and bolts of the agricultural bill that they do every 5 years. I mean, you might say, hey, look, the last one had way too many earmarks. Let's cut those back. Or you might say, I love earmarks. Make sure I get a few. I mean, I hope they wouldn't be saying that, but I mean, there's a tone that comes from the top, and there's a tone if I put you there and I know, the first earmark you see that looks good is the first earmark you see that looks good, I can pretty well expect, A, to be people bitching about it to me, that you're not doing the job right, and also think that at the end of 5 years, the agricultural bill you dump on my desk is going to have a lot less earmarks than before, because I know that's the way you feel, right? Yeah. And when I put you in there, I said, by the way, I know that this is the way you feel. I agree with you. I expect there to be less. So, I mean, but still, I'm not going to go. That committee probably meets, you know, who knows, 2-3 times a week, maybe, depending on how close they are, or for 2-3 hours. The staffers are working on it all the time, and it's big work. So, I mean, but you would think that if you're on the committee on TV, you would at least know what the hell you're talking about for that minute. You would think. How many people today? I guarantee there'll be somebody who'll walk on today, and Maxine Waters, before she got a, you know, big committee chair, was famous for this. You know, there'll be a Fed person out there and they're talking money supply and all this kind of stuff that the Fed can do, and she'll walk up and say, and she's not alone, so it's not just because she's black and female. She'll say, well, I don't see anything you're doing like helping jobs for people in my district. And then he'll look at her and say, duh. You know, so what do you... I mean, I'm at a level where I'm trying to keep the right amount of money in the entire system where the entire ship can move forward, I really can't worry about your bed being lumpy in steerage or something like that. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just not a question. I mean, and he's going to be very diplomatic and say, well, because this happened, the jobs are moving up, so hopefully it should help. By the way, the jobs, which of course isn't his to take credit for, he's going to say there's probably more minority jobs created nominally in the last 5 years than ever before. Okay, so he'll have some BS he throws back at her because he's prepared for it. But it's still, I mean, nothing he does, I mean, it's like saying, you know, do you have an idea how many people are getting shot this weekend in Chicago? So let me get this straight. You're doing this stuff, if you lower these interest rates, if you don't lower these interest rates and get people jobs, we'll have more shootings this weekend because nobody's got a job. And you scratch your head and say, well, maybe, but, you know, what are you talking about? I mean, it's so far removed, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You know, that's what we were talking about with Kevin earlier. I mean, there's levels of all this stuff. I mean, if you're the governor of Illinois or Indiana and you can grow distribution systems in your state terrifically, and you got guys like Kevin with the educational system helping out, and you've got housing that's affordable, and you don't have pension issues. If all that stuff happens and Indiana or Southern Michigan becomes this vibrant community, you know, that's spectacular. But if Matty Weber's sitting in the Oval Office, he's going to say, all we did was move from Illinois to Indiana. Right? Well, we haven't gained anything.
Right.
So, I mean, you've probably got newer places, better places, more efficient. It's not like you didn't gain anything. What I'm saying is there's no growth there. We just, you know, robbed Peter to pay Paul. Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think what these guys' problem is they just can't seem to get this growth happening. And I think a lot of the reasons are, and I can point like five of them out there, I think the burdensome of student loan debt, doesn't mean I want to forgive them, but we could lower the rate a little bit. I think, you know, the credit card interest on families, I mean, anybody now who has credit card bills that maybe they shouldn't have, anybody in a family gets sick, they're instant bankruptcy, or they're late with a payment, and instead of 15%, they're 24% with late charges.
Right.
So all of a sudden, you can never come back from that as a family, I don't think. Unless you go out and rob something. I mean, the even in your mortgage payment. You miss two mortgage payments, hopefully you never have to, and I'd mean neither. But I mean, you know, I'll say to Audrey, why don't you go give them the two payments? Oh no, you miss two payments or three or whatever the number is, it's buried in the back of the clause, it's now you owe some attorney, you know, $800. Well, what did he do? Well, we don't even know who he is or what he did, but you owe somebody $800 that for an attorney fee, even though you don't know who the hell the guy is or what he did. And all of a sudden for you to pay your 3 months behind mortgage, it might cost you the equivalent of 5 months. If they'll even let you do that. So, okay, now, why is that? I mean, you can't tell me that a reasonable 50 or 75 hour, payment penalty, you know, is that good enough to get you back on track? I would say yes. But that's not the world we live in. So, I don't know. Maybe so. I mean, you get so many people right at the edge of having any problems, and the minute you tip over the edge even a little bit, it's like it's not like you land in a 2 foot moat. You're landing in the Humboldt Park Lagoon where the alligator is.
Yeah, for those that haven't seen that story, there's apparently a 4 foot alligator swimming freely in the Humboldt Park Lagoon on the north side. Which is, a little interesting.
Well, you could just wait a winter and the guy'll die.
Yeah, but hopefully they get him out of there before then. And,
so what do you think he's eating in there?
I'm sure there's stuff to eat in there.
But they're probably not gonna kill him. They're probably gonna bring him to the zoo.
Well, yeah, ideally they get him out of there and put him in a zoo or ship him down south to an alligator sanctuary or whatever.
Well, we could put him to sleep. We try and figure out what he ate and if he's already got grown a third eye from the stuff that's in the Humboldt Park Lagoon.
Yeah, well, apparently he already has a Twitter account, so he's active on Twitter. Hopefully he follows us.
I mean, I don't think I've ever been hanging around Humboldt Park, but going out there, it'll take a while to find the guy, or is he 4 feet? And what if if you bring 10 people out there, are you going to spot him right away or what?
Well, I've only been to the actual Humboldt Park once. A friend had like a picnic party type thing there with like brought the grill out and that whole thing. And then, you know, but it's one of those, when the sun goes down, you kind of get out of there because it gets a little, yes. It's, let's just say it's not the safest neighborhood in the city. Although it's gotten a lot better.
Yep.
But yeah, I don't know how easy it is to spot it, but apparently hundreds of people have spotted them and the news has picked it up and it's been a big story.
Well, I mean, I think Humboldt Park's a lot bigger than Marquette Park. And Marquette Park, the lagoon, if you just kayak, well, I don't know if anybody would do that, but if you kayaked on a lagoon, I bet it's got to be pushing a mile.
Yeah, yeah. And Humboldt Park is, I think, bigger than that, yeah.
You wonder, you know, every, like, 75 years, you'd think you would, you know, drain one of those things, clean it out, and God, what do you think you'd see in the bottom of one of those things?
Oh, my gosh. I don't know.
But, I mean, we're never going to clean them? I mean, I'm just saying. I mean, I don't know. I mean, they got to be spring fed or something. But
by the way, before we get out of here, yeah. Can I say something on the Jeffrey Epstein thing?
Yeah, yeah.
Have we talked about that at all?
We have not.
I don't think we have. Which it's kind of a big story. But
yeah, well, but I didn't know enough about it to.
Well, I mean, the fact is he's been indicted, and I think he's. I don't know if he's pled guilty or what, but on charges of. Dozens and dozens, if not hundreds, of accusations that he was raping underage children. I mean, just to put it simply,
I don't get the
yeah. He was
that,
basically sex trafficking and shipping in women ages 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, whatever. Certainly under 18 from all over the country and all over the world. That were, typically from broken homes, and that's usually how it goes.
So
and
what do? You go to the bus station, just wait for somebody to get off, and say you'll buy them breakfast. And
well, when you're a billionaire, I think you have people that gather these women up, and then apparently he was paying his most loyal 15, 16 year old girls to recruit other girls, and then they would get extra bonuses and gifts. So these poor girls that had nothing, that were on the street, were essentially doing sexual favors for this guy for $100 here, $500 here, gifts, etc., and then they got bonuses for recruiting other girls, and it was a big thing. And then he would, he famously had his private island and all this stuff. And
private island,
yeah, like, I mean, whatever. So my whole point on it is there's accusations that President Clinton was potentially involved at one point. Not that he was actually sleeping with these girls, but certainly possible. There's accusations that President Trump was involved in these parties and potentially.
Well, the guy has to. If you throw those big parties, those guys will show.
Yeah, and not saying that either one of them actually did anything with these girls or not, but we'll see what comes out, and then potentially other rich and famous people, and I just want to put it out there very clearly. If President Trump or if President Clinton or if anyone else that maybe you like, maybe you don't like is involved, I absolutely don't care about their party affiliation, and I want them prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
Well, if you just...
It's weird on Twitter. People are, bashing Trump or people are bashing Clinton, one or the other, as if it should matter one lick what their political right. affiliation is. If they're involved in any way, shape, or form with sex trafficking and raping underage girls, I want them in jail and or burned at the stake.
Oh, God, yeah.
And I don't give a rat's ass if it's a Democrat or a Republican or if it's a professional athlete that I love or an actor that I love or whatever. That's it. So the people on Twitter that are like bashing Trump and ignoring Clinton, or bashing Clinton and ignoring Trump in this, or anyone else. And again, not saying that they're guilty because I don't know yet, but just their names have been floating out there.
I can't.
I mean, you are sick if you were putting political affiliation ahead of
as much as
children.
If there were, attractive 35-year-olds there, and those guys heard about them, they might both be there.
Yeah,
that's a whole. I don't even. The idea, these guys, can you imagine? I actually was hearing, I'm putting them in the same sentence, but one of my buddies was telling me he had a friend who went to one of A-Rod's parties.
Mm.
And evidently, when you go, cell phone's at the door. Nobody has a cell phone in the place. And,
smart.
Oh, yeah. And you got to make sure no guns. I mean, you got to make sure that if you're invited, you get to go. And
you got to go through the metal detector wand or what?
I'm thinking pretty close.
Yeah.
But they said they want to just have a regular party and invite some people, and they don't want people snapping pictures and none of that crap. And I don't, But I mean,
I should start.
I would say that if you and I got invited to an A-Rod party, which will never happen, and we
speak for yourself.
Well, you know, I don't think it would happen to me. That's for sure. But I mean, if I found out 20 years from now he was a sex trafficker, I wouldn't probably know from going to that party. So I mean, I'm going to hold out judgment.
Absolutely,
on the two guys until
absolutely, and I am too. I'm just saying that you know, the idea that the two sides are basing their finger pointing on political affiliation, that's really weird to me.
Well, if you trotted out 15 year old girls and you didn't call the police, what the hell?
Well, exactly. Even if you didn't partake, but you were there and didn't call the police or didn't bring it to someone's attention, I think that's a little weird too.
I think you not only have to bring it to somebody's attention, you better make sure that person followed up on it.
Well, yeah, we saw what happened with Joe Pa.
Yeah, I mean, you gotta make sure.
He didn't act accordingly, in most people's opinion, and he was shamed up until his death.
Yeah, but it's a, I'm sure that in his private life, he would never do something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to, there's certain things where you have to be proactive, you know.
Yeah.
And, clearly, this is SP Futures up 11:50. We're hoping it's a dovish talk today. It looks like we're talking about NASDAQ Futures up 53. Talk about it tomorrow.
What do we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTIsecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.